Senator Murphy, welcome to the division.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and this is a first stop for the bill. And Council, Mr. Fuller had an amendment drafted up, the A1 amendment for this bill.
And we have the A1 amendment.
Yes.
And Senator Wieger moves the A1 amendment. I guess we should wait until we have a quorum to actually vote. So, Senator Murphy, why don't you go ahead and explain your bill?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chairman, what this bill attempts to do, and this is in regards to the public safety officer death benefit, is if there's a Minnesota resident that qualifies for this program, and as in the case of one individual that is from my district, they weren't able to use this benefit at an institution in Wisconsin. Now, what Mr. Fuller has drafted up as an amendment would allow that to happen. And as you can see, it's only in those other states that we have a reciprocity agreement with. I'm not aware of a fiscal note being done for this, Madam Chair, but I think it would be very, if there was one, it would be very small, just knowing the types of reciprocity agreements that we have. And this would allow the student that I know of to be covered in Wisconsin, or if they wanted to go to the Dakotas or Iowa, because we have reciprocity there.
Senator Murphy, we don't have the fiscal note yet, but we're told that it's probably going to be about $12,000, and we can absorb that in the current appropriation for the program.
Okay, that would be great, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions on Senate File 276 or the amendment? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering how many students are currently eligible for that program. Is it a very wide, a large number?
Welcome, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Tricia Grimes from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. On average, we have about 15 students a year that have been using the program up till now.
Senator Roebling.
Madam Chair, is it the full amount of their tuition and fees and room and board, or what? How much does it cover?
Ms. Grimes.
Madam Chair, I'm trying to remember. I believe it's up to the amount that at the University of Minnesota, up to the tuition and required fees at the University of Minnesota.
But they could take that money and go to another college.
Right.
That's the cap.
Right. That's the maximum it could be. It's whatever their tuition and fees are, as long as it's less than that amount.
Oh, I see. So it's the exact tuition and fees.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Well,
Madam
Chair, if we look at this strictly as a scholarship, maybe, it would be okay, as long as we don't mix it up with the state grant program, because if we start doing this with our state grant program, we could really have an explosion in costs as students choose to use that out of state. So I guess that we have to make clear that this is...
It's a separate appropriation.
A separate
line item. Right.
Not coming out of our grant program. Right.
Okay. Well, Senator Murphy, we don't have to keep you any longer. We still don't have a quorum, although we're getting close. But we'll just... your bill will be laid over... we could actually adopt it into the omnibus bill, which we could just do. We don't even have to lay it over.
That would be great, Madam Chair.
Okay. So you can leave, and as soon as we have a quorum, we'll go ahead and take action on it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Senator Latz? Senator Latz not here. This is a problem, because then we have to adjourn and convene the policy committee. Can somebody find Senator Latz?
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Yes?
Mark Hazzi with the Council on Crime and Justice. I'm working with Senator Latz and his
Okay,
bill.
Why don't you come forward?
Okay.
So this is Senate File 361. Do other people have the bill? Or Cara, she's got two things to do at once.
think Senator Latz has a bill in another hearing.
Why don't you just wait a second and we'll pass out the bill. It's coming. Okay, why don't you introduce yourself for the record and tell us what this is about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, members of the committee. My name is Mark Haase. The last name is spelled H-A-A-S-E. I'm the Director of Public Policy and Advocacy at the Council on Crime and Justice. The Council is a nonprofit organization based in Minneapolis that our mission is to build community capacity to address...
Mr. Haase, are you here for 361, which is the in-state tuition for veterans?
I am sorry, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'm here for
You're here for the later
537.
Yeah, okay. We have an unusual circumstance, members, in that since we're both a policy committee and a budget division, we actually have to adjourn as one or the other. So right now we have convened as the budget division. And before we move on to the policy bills, we have to adjourn the budget division and reconvene as a policy committee and change the tape.
You're kidding.
This is never, I've never seen this before.
And
so we need, is anyone here for Senator Latz's bill, Senate File 361? What? Oh, yes. Why don't you come forward
here
then?
Here he comes, Madam Chair.
Okay, and let's talk about Senate File 361. And the rest of you, don't go away. We'll get to you.
So what's up?
Senator Latz, Senate File 361 is the in-state tuition for veterans and credit for military coursework.
Thank you.
And do you need a copy of the bill?
I have it.
You were waiting for us in 123?
No, actually, I was speaking with the deputy commissioner in my office, not expecting this to be pulled up so quickly. So I'm sorry. That I'm late. We switched. Okay.
A quorum is present. Let the record show.
So, Madam Chair, Senate File 361 is a proposal to do two things relating to our higher education institutions on behalf of the veterans in Minnesota, or not in Minnesota, that we hope might come here. One of those proposals was to provide for in-state tuition as an incentive to come here. However, that, as it turns out, carries about a $500,000 price tag for the University of Minnesota. And I'm not willing, under these budgetary circumstances this year, to impose that kind of a cost on the U. MNSCU already does provide for in-state tuition for veterans, whether they're residents of Minnesota when they apply or not. So what I'd like to ask the committee to do is to adopt the A1 amendment that deletes Section 1 of the bill. That would leave just the course equivalency provision, and I can speak to that.
Okay. Senator Latz moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted.
Thank you. The remaining portion of the bill is designed to provide for course credit for the classes which veterans take in connection with their military service when they come to or return to Minnesota and enroll in a MNSCU or institution or a University of Minnesota institution. It would have the benefit of saving them time and tuition dollars in getting their degrees. It would also have the benefit of encouraging them to come to Minnesota and enroll in higher education. And it would get them out into the economy, benefiting all of our state communities with their knowledge and expertise more quickly and with less debt. MNSCU has communicated to me that they believe they are already in compliance with that provision of this bill as well. The University of Minnesota has a slightly different process in the way they've handled these kinds of questions. I think a less coordinated, less centrally coordinated process for determining course equivalency. I've had some conversations with them, and I think what I'd ask the committee to do is to listen to the deputy commissioner with regard to his perspective on the veterans' experiences on this question, and listen to the U, and then the committee can determine if it's something that it makes sense to move forward with.
Deputy Commissioner, please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. Mike Puglisi, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. First, I'd just like to say that we work very closely with both MinSCU and the U of M. They've been great partners with us over the past few years and have put in place some great policies to make it a little bit more convenient for veterans and military members and their families to achieve higher learning. So we're very thankful to them for that partnership. As a department, we're very supportive of this bill, as are the veteran service organizations. I think the bill is necessary because through our higher education veterans programs, we're hearing from veterans that are attending school at the University of Minnesota campuses that they don't believe that their experience from military is being applied appropriately. They talk to their friends that are going to schools either in the private sector or the MinSCU campuses, and they seem to think that those campuses, the MinSCU school systems, giving them a much more liberal look at the different courses and experiences that they've had through their military experience. So we'd like to see the University of Minnesota do the same.
Okay, and that was Deputy Commissioner. What's your last name again?
Puglisi, Puglisi.
Good range name.
Then Senator Latz, was there someone here from the University of Minnesota that wanted to comment?
Look around and see. There is. I should note that the bill itself does not require that credit be given for any particular course. It requires that the institution put together a guide, centrally issued guide, that does identify where the courses have already been determined to, you know, pre-qualify, if you will, for a equivalent credit, and to provide sort of a centrally formalized paperwork and mechanism for veterans to be able to look at. Perhaps in the course of that review, there might be more courses added to that list. In any case, I'd like to hear what the university has to say.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, I'm Peter Zetterberg. I work in the Office of the Provost at the University of Minnesota. I was actually here to testify on both provisions, but now that the first one is gone, I can concentrate on the second.
The public safety officer death benefit?
No,
you're here to comment?
The second provision of 361.
The section one. Okay.
Correct. All right. Madam Chair, the university takes very seriously its role in helping veterans succeed at the University of Minnesota. We have a very active veteran services office. This year we have about 600 veterans who are students on university campuses. This includes both undergraduate students and also quite a few graduate students and even students in some of our first professional programs like medicine and dentistry and veterinary medicine. We do maintain course equivalency guides for all of our transfer students. The Twin Cities campus has more transfer students each year than any other institution in the state. This year, we have 2,800 students who have successfully transferred to the university. With respect specifically to veterans, they go through the same process as other transfer students or as other students applying for admission as freshmen in terms of how any coursework they have is brought to us. I would point out that the military, in the broadest terms, probably offers more opportunities for education and for training than any organization in the world. It is not as though there is a very small, finite number of educational programs or training programs that would be brought to our attention. We evaluate each and every one. We do add them to our course equivalency list, so if we see them again, we already have it on record. And that is the basic process that we use. I'd be happy to take any additional questions that there might be about that.
It should be okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Zetterberg?
Correct.
I'm looking at the materials that I think Senator Lantz's office provided, but it looks pretty black and white right now. No credit is awarded for schools that are specific to military activities or for military occupational specialty. So I appreciate that you are trying to be helpful to veterans and you have a process, but in fact, if a veteran walks onto campus and is trying to determine if he or she gets any credit for any military courses, it looks like the answer right now at the U is no. Am I reading that wrong?
Mr. Zetterberg.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure exactly what you're looking at, and I guess it would all depend on how we're defining military course or military credit.
Well, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Michelle.
So Senator Lantz, I mean, you're hearing my question there. Isn't that the point of your bill is to somehow try to recognize the time, the effort, and the hours that these vets are putting in into something that to all of us looks educational, but at this point is not being recognized by our public higher education institutions in the form of credits. Is that, am I reading it wrong?
Senator Lantz.
Madam Chair, Senator Michelle, I guess that's the underlying goal of the bill, but the bill is not that prescriptive. The bill does not attempt to mandate that the U take any particular kinds of courses and say you're going to give them credit now, even if last year you looked at it and decided you weren't going to give credit for it. But the bill does attempt to provide for some centralized formal guide, a list that's available to whoever wants to look at it as people are planning, which would be changing on a regular basis as more courses are offered. And I think it would have the additional effect in that process, perhaps, of getting the university to maybe look a little bit further or a little more liberally, as a liberal arts institution, towards some of the course equivalency work. You know, it's an amendment to the section of the statute that provides for the same kind of course equivalency guides between MNSCU and the U, which obviously if someone enters a MNSCU institution and they intend after 2 years to transfer to the U, they want to make sure the classes they're taking at MNSCU are going to transfer with credits, you know, toward their degree at the U, then they can use that course equivalency guide and they can make decisions about which classes to take, so that will happen. People who are going into the military probably aren't going to take along with them the course equivalency guide from the University of Minnesota to decide which military courses to take. But maybe some will if they're thinking down the road. But either way, when they come back, it would give them a better sense of guidance as to what they can expect and shouldn't expect. And I think the message is that we really want to encourage the U to be as proactive as they can and as open as they can to providing credit for the kinds of experience courses that the military is giving.
And thank you, Senator Lantz. And Madam Chair, just a follow-up. I mean, this is great. I appreciate how you're trying to encourage the U more than mandate or require right now. I feel like I've gotten a number of inquiries on this topic from veterans who are frustrated that, you know, they believe what they've learned, what they've gone through, should qualify at some level for credits. And so this is a step towards that. And so I was going to ask the deputy commissioner if you're hearing a similar frustration from the veterans community. And
Madam Chair, Senator Michelle, we are.
Mr. Puglisi.
We are hearing that, Senator. You know, and through our campus representative program, we have veteran representatives on a lot of the campuses throughout the state. They're hearing it. And what is very frustrating to them is when they have the same experience as their friend, they serve in the Marine Corps or the Army together, One went into the U of M, another one goes into MinSCU. MinSCU's given them a lot of credits for the same experience, and yet the University of Minnesota isn't. That's what they're finding very frustrating. They don't understand why it can't be the same across the board.
So then the question is, once MinSCU gives them credit and then they want to transfer to the university, those courses aren't recognized. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I believe that to be true.
Mr. Zetterberg, did you want to say something?
Madam Chair, that would very much depend on the MinSCU institution that granted the credit. If it was a technical college, that in fact might not be true.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for jumping in the middle of this bill. So I just want to ask some clarifying questions. But I agree with the concept. I think this is a wonderful thing that we are really taking a look at. Some opportunities that our veterans have had during their military service. And if you really pull back and look, I mean, it's all taxpayer paid anyway. I mean, the taxpayers paid for the training while these folks were in the service. And if they've gotten a different MOS for a particular function, all of a sudden now you get out of the service and they want to move into the private sector job and they run into course requirements. And it seems to me that last year Senator Vickerman authored a bill where he was working with the first responders and ambulance associations and that sort of thing that would create, I think it was the first ever in the nation, a program that would look at the training that the military folks had had on with emergency care and first responder kind of MOSs and link it up with and identify where the educational gaps were for the civilian sector. And rather than making them start all over at the bottom, they identify maybe they just need an additional 4 weeks here or a little bit of an update course here. So we're looking at educational bridges to move people from their MOS into the civilian sector. And I think Senator Lori's carrying that bill this year.
Senator Ropes, I believe you're correct.
Okay. So, and that's the first in the nation effort, and I think we actually need to do that for all the MOSs, because I can tell you I worked with a lot of Navy corpsmen in the service.
Senator Erickson Ropes, what's MOS?
Military Occupational Specialty.
Okay.
So these folks then have gone through real intensive training in a particular area, whether it's small engines repair or in my particular situation, I worked with Navy corpsmen who are somewhere between RNs and LPNs. And to have those folks start over and learn how to take temperatures, you know, when they get out is a little ridiculous. So I think this is a great pathway, and we need lots of different pathways, I think, to coordinate the military education with the civilian sector. So Senator Latz, does your bill do any of that as well? Because I do see here that you're talking about formal military courses, and I've had a few myself. And then occupational training. And I'm not sure who evaluates those courses to say that they are there's an equivalent at the university, or could you explain to me how this is going to be implemented?
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair and Senator Erickson Ropes, I can explain part of it, I think, but I think Mr. Zetterberg can probably give you a better explanation of how the university approaches these questions now. But the bill is targeted at formal military training courses and occupational training. I presume that would, you know, have some sort of a formalized curriculum. It's not the kind of take your life experience and what do you know and give you X number of credits for that. There are some institutions that do that. I know Metro State, for example, has degree programs for people who midlife reenter higher education, and they can figure out a way to get credit for what they've learned over the course of their life, even if it wasn't in a formal course. My mom got her degree that way, in part. The bill is focused on more formal coursework and training.
Members, the letter from Chancellor McCormick that was passed out to Senator Latz at the bottom of the first page, they talk about how MinSCU recognizes courses and award credit for a veteran's military training or service if the courses meet the standards of the American Council on Education or the equivalent. So they must have some kind of a process for awarding equivalency. And Mr. Zetterberg, what might that process be at the university?
Madam Chair, the process is that we would evaluate whatever a prospective student presents to us in the way of formal coursework to see if there is an equivalent course at the University of Minnesota. Sometimes there would be and sometimes there would not be. And sometimes a course that would be accepted by a technical college would not be accepted by us.
Okay.
But once we have done that for a particular course, we do retain a record of that in our course equivalency guides, which are used by our admissions office staff, so that when we see it again, we already have evaluated the program or the specific course. Again, we'll continue to improve in this area. We'll continue to be as proactive as we can. But our process is that we do this for each individual student as they present to us just exactly what it is they took advantage of in their military service.
Mr. Zetterberg, just out of curiosity, the Section 1 that was deleted, we got various informal information about the cost here. First, we were told that you couldn't determine the cost, and then there was a determination it might cost $500,000. And did you have a cost that you thought this section would require?
Yes, Madam Chair, I actually did the fiscal analysis for this, and it was $329,125. I mean, we knew exactly what the cost would be if the waiver were in effect this year. The only point of clarification we were going to seek is whether or not the waiver would apply to graduate and first professional students as well as to undergraduate students, because half the cost was for graduate students and students in medicine, dentistry, and veterinary medicine.
Okay.
The cost is about $170,000 if it were to apply only to undergraduate students.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions on Section 2, the remaining part of the bill? Anyone else in the audience want to testify? Then Senator Latz would move that Senate File 361 be laid over for consideration in the omnibus bill. Okay? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. We should just adopt it. Then I want to revert back to... Actually, we could have just...
Do you want to reconsider?
Yeah, why don't you reconsider? Because we can just adopt it. We might as well start.
Motion to reconsider.
Senator Sharon moves that the motion for Senate File 361 be reconsidered. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Now, Senator Latz. Senator Coring?
Well, Madam Chair, I was just going to say that, you know, I thought the protocol was that Senator Latz is actually on this committee, so I'm wondering if we want to do Senator Day, being that he's been waiting, or don't you want to do that?
Senator Coring, we are right now,
oh,
going
okay.
to Senator Day.
Okay.
We have to adjourn the division and convene the committee in order to take up Senator Day's bill.
Okay.
So that's the way it worked. Senator Latz now moves that Senate File 361 as amended be recommended to pass and included in the omnibus higher ed bill. Okay?
So moved.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Murphy's bill on Senate File 276. Then I think Senator Wieger is not here. Senator Roebling was here. Do you want to make the motion?
Madam Chair, first we have to move the amendment.
Okay. Senator Roebling moves the A1 amendment on Senate File 276, and that should be before members. That was to put the bill in the shape that Senator Murphy wanted it in. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Then Senate File 276, which has a, just for you, those of you who are late, it does have a $12,000 cost, but it can be absorbed in the current appropriation, assuming we don't cut it. So maybe we better lay it over for possible inclusion. Okay. Senator Roebling moves that Senate File 276 as amended be recommended to pass and Senator Roebling moves that Senate File 276 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Yes.
When did you intend to proceed with Senate File 537, the one that started when I wasn't here and then came back in?
So I can remember. We actually didn't start it.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
No, we didn't start it. So, well, okay. It'll be right on the agenda right after Senator Day. Okay, now, excuse me, the Senate Higher Education Budget Division is adjourned. Okay, so we've got to change the tape. We're not changing the tape? Oh, okay. Okay, the Senate Higher Education Committee will come to order. The first bill on the agenda is Senator Day, Senate File 397. Senator Day, thanks for your patience.
Madam Chair and members, I didn't think it was bad at all. I'm glad Senator Coring is looking out for me, but that's good. Madam Chair, and I, you know, that I had visited a little with you, and I would like to let members know that I just need about 5 minutes of your time, and you can relax because I'm not going to ask for a vote on my bill. And the reason is, well, there's many reasons, but one of them is that our schools are, you know, they're hurting for dollars right now, and I guess the last thing they need is to have somebody come forward and try and get our local schools to throw in some more dollars. But what I wanted to visit with you about, and it's about the remedial training that's needed. Even this morning in St. Paul paper, Thursday morning, fail the test, get diploma anyway. One person says, frankly, until we get things right in our K-12 system, I'd rather move kids forward. You know, another comment was, I don't think the problem is in the school. I think the problem is in the test. What's happening in my area? And I've, you know, a lot of people have come to me and they're saying, you know, our kids go through our fine schools in Minnesota, and especially in my area. So I'll talk strictly about my own high schools that kids are graduating from my high school, and 36% roughly in the five districts I have need remedial training when they go to college. And the taxpayers are saying, whoa, wait a minute here. What's going on? Why should we pay here, and then it goes over here, and then we pay again? Now, I know there was a bill one time way back. I think Senator Larson had the bill, and I think that went by the wayside a while back. But the question, I believe, is, so I went to my school boards. Now, you'll all get a kick out of this. The school boards blamed it onto the colleges, that due to the fact of the way they were giving the tests and the way things were matching up just wasn't right. So I'm hoping that somewhere along the line, and I probably should be maybe the bill should have went to K-12 and talked to them, because I'm going to try over the summertime here to team up with whoever, because I think we have a major problem, and somehow we're going to have to get this solved, because what's happening is our schools are turning out thousands and thousands of students that are not ready to go to college. And it behooves us all. When you pick up an editorial, used to be Representative Joe Opatz, but now President Joe Opatz of Normandale, 70%. 70%. How can we keep in place an education system that is turning out students that can't do the work when they get to college? And so I went through all the different schools throughout the state of Minnesota. Some are atrocious. Some are probably, a lot of them are along the lines of mine, where we think we have wonderful schools. I had four children go through the Owatonna public school system, and they all graduated from college. So I believe that we don't have a down and out system, but we sure do have a problem. And I guess all I would say is, if there's somebody that's working with higher education, and there's some committee meetings, I just want to offer my services, because I believe that we have a major major problem, and we can't just keep blaming it on. As I found, high schools blame it on the colleges, and I don't really buy into that. I buy into the students just aren't getting the correct education, and so I'm not here to tell you that I'm on the side of the colleges. I'm more probably should be giving this talk to the K-12 people, but I just want people to know, and I just want to be one, and I'm sure there's many others that are in the state. Hopefully there are, because if we continue to keep rolling like we're rolling, and everybody thinks that the system we have is good, it's not working. We're spending just a terrible amount of dollars on remedial training for people, and I just hope that somewhere within the college systems, and if they have some meetings, I just hope that by me being here, they'll know that I'm along with a whole host of other people that feel that something needs to be done. And I appreciate the committee chair, and I told her one of the problems I have with the bill is that if I could get it passed, it would take money from my school districts. And right now, my school districts just don't I don't know how to leverage them. I know that would be a wonderful way to maybe do the job leveraging. But in the meantime, we just don't have the wherewithal to get things done that we need to get done at the present time. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you for listening
to
me. I didn't want to take a lot of your time, and I just wanted to bring it up and know that there's somebody else that's going to try and help between now and next session, hopefully maybe put together some type program.
Senator Day, you bring up two really good issues, and one is the alignment issue between K-12 and higher ed, and do the high school teachers, I think there has been a disconnect, is that the skills that the high school teachers believe students need to be successful in college have not necessarily been the skill set that the colleges believe that the kids need to have to be successful in college. And we were hoping that the P16 Council would work those out. And then you bring up a second good point, is the issue that high school students are not required to take rigorous enough courses so that they're prepared for college. And perhaps Senator Weaker, who's our liaison to K-12, is anyone else on the committee on K-12? Senator Roebling is too, so, and Senator Michelle, perhaps you, the three of you, could just take a minute and enlighten us, because I kind of share this frustration. I'm not on K-12 anymore, as to what kind of progress are we making with increasing the requirements for rigor, and is that part of the problem with the math test, is that it's rigorous, but the kids aren't there yet? Senator Weaker.
Well, Madam Chair, I want to mention first, Senator Pogemiller had a proposal about 8 or 9 years ago, which would, it was similar to your Senator Day, and it actually would have been a chargeback. And if the student needed any remedial work, there would be a chargeback to the public schools.
I think that was Senator Larson.
Or Senator Larson? Yes,
that was Larson.
And, but I remembered it in the committee. In terms of what's being done, we have set very high standards. That's the good news. The bad news is that a lot of students are not proficient in math, which is the highest area where the remediation occurs. I think it's 35% for remediation in Minsku. At the university, it's not too high because of the added rigor for admission to that school. We're wrestling with that now on the grad test, which 11th grade students will take April 14 to 15. And there's lots of teachers, parents, and others that are working on that. I know there's a lot of students in remediation. The Commissioner of Ed is very aware of this problem. The key is to have students ready for school in kindergarten. The key is to have early identification of problems and intervention as soon as we are aware. We have a program where I believe in our budget that would have an intense ninth grade intervention for any student. And I believe Senator Pappas, you're carrying that. There is a proposal. The governor, I believe, is advocating this for intense ninth grade intervention for those students that may be at risk or there is a proficiency concern. But the K-12, the whole E-12 system is aware of it. It needs to be a collective dialogue with early ed K-12 and higher. I think the P-16 Council has been doing a lot of work on this. We'll actually be discussing that later. But, Madam Chair and Senator Day, I agree with the frustration, the concerns that you have, and it's a goal that we need to achieve.
Madam Chair, I'll get a hold of Senator Wigger and Senator Roebling and Shell, and I'll try and, you know, I was looking at, I mean, statistics between 2004 and 2007 of 237,000 kids that graduated, 114,000 went to college. But anyway, 41,000, 37% across our state needed remedial, at least one class. I think more may, 41,000. When I got looking at it, I just know that, you know, I don't know exactly how we do it without taking money from people, but there has to be some way that people match up. So,
right,
Madam Chair, I will.
The members are really interested in this topic, Senator Day, okay. So we'll take a few more comments. Senator Roebling.
Well, there's a couple of things that help contribute to that. One of the things that we have had happen in recent years is more non-traditional students and people who have been out of the school system for a while going back to school, and especially in math, they have forgotten a lot of the skills that they've learned, and so before they are ready to start college courses, they have to brush up on them. And the other thing is, and this kind of concerns me, and something we did, is we said, for example, that students have to take algebra in eighth grade. And then they have like two more math courses I think we expect them to take. But then their junior and senior years, a lot of them, unless they're going to like the University of Minnesota and they know they're college bound and they're very focused and goal oriented, may not be taking any math classes. So then they get to the college entrance tests and find out that their skills are gone. They've forgotten a lot of things. And so then they end up being recommended into the remedial classes before they start again. And so part of it is that we are not tracking them consistently so that their skills stay at a high enough level throughout their high school years. And I think this is our problem, and we have got to deal with it somehow, because you do forget skills if you're not using them, and especially higher math skills.
We do have data that says that the students are more successful in college if they take math their senior year. For that very reason, is they forget their math. Senator Michelle.
Well, I just listening to the conversation, Madam Chair. I know you talked about this earlier, but you know, we're busy. We don't want more meetings, but it sounds like a great topic for a joint meeting with the K-12 committee. Mm. You know, it'd be great to bring in Senator Day for about half an hour and see what he can whip up, right?
Thank you. Senator Coring.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm just kind of wondering, does MinSCU or the university, do they track this at all? And how much does it cost?
MinSCU gives us remedial
reports. No, it's for both.
For both. We do have remedial reports.
We do?
Yeah. And Senator Coring, check with Dr. Weidman, and she can get that for you.
And then, Madam Chair, if I can just inquire, so are we just hearing this for informational purposes?
We are.
Right.
I would think that this would be important for K-12 to hear, so we're not going to pass it on to them.
We could do that, Senator Day, if you want to go to K-12. See, we're in a policy committee. We had referred to the Education Policy Committee, the K-12 Policy Committee. Yeah, we could do that.
I would appreciate that. I'd go like, any place that I can. Do.
Just for like the to, discussion. Like I mean, we. I don't know if Senator Stump will give you a hearing, but and we haven't really gone over the bill, so maybe we could refer to them without recommendation.
Yeah.
And we don't
like
have to.
To make that motion, if that's okay. With
well, Madam Chair, and I would assure that I'm not. That would be great. And I would assure Senator Stump also, I'm not trying to put people on the line. I understand the problems we have right now with the costs, and education doesn't have money, and we're going through one heck of a bad time. I just want to get this thing rolling a little bit and help out wherever I can, because in a couple, 2-3 years from now, maybe we can get this under control.
Okay.
So.
Madam Chair, I would
say. Senator Latz, just a minute, Senator Coyne.
Madam Chair, I just want to compliment Senator Day. This is the first I've seen of something along this scope. I wasn't around when mm-hmm. Senator Larson apparently did his chargeback provisions. But this is very creative thinking, yeah. and I like the thrust and the goal of it. I just appreciate the chance to engage in this discussion around these ideas. The one question I had is whether or not any of the higher education institutions at this time do, in fact, give credit toward a degree for remedial courses, which they may offer.
I don't believe they do.
They don't count.
They don't count, and they use up their state grant money, mm-hmm. which is why I did the summer bridge program, so that students could try to get as much remedial in the summer before they start school to help them make it through for 2 years. Okay, then, Senator Coring.
Madam Chair, I would so move that Senate file 397 be recommended to pass without recommendation and sent to the K-12 Policy Committee. Is that
yes.
the right motion?
Yes. Senator Coring moves that Senate file 397 be sent without recommendation to the K-12 Policy Committee.
Split right now.
E-12. Thank you.
E-12.
Whoa. We are chastised. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam
thank
Chair,
you, Senator
and members,
Day.
Thank you.
Senator Latz, Senate File 537. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 537 would require post-secondary institutions to notify prospective students of the potential effects of a criminal conviction on future employment. The goal of this bill is to avoid situations where a person who has a criminal conviction of one sort or another applies to a degree-granting program, gets a degree, qualifies educationally for a license for a particular career, and when they get to the point of trying to enter that career, either whether it's got a licensing requirement or otherwise, they find that there is some sort of prohibition on them entering that career because of that conviction. In which case, of course, they've spent a lot of time and money getting educated in a field that they aren't going to be able to apply for a career. And this may be the case, for convictions or even for charges, depending on the kind of licensing that is required and the kind of career that they're looking for. So we thought it would only be fair for them that when they enter the higher education institution, they be notified that, you may not be able to get a job in this area because you're not going to get a license. So that's the purpose of the bill. I have with me Mark Hazy, the Director of Public Policy and Advocacy from the Council on Crime and Justice, who would like to share some thoughts on this. And then also we have an individual with us, Shantae Holmes, who has actually been impacted by this situation.
Okay. Welcome back, Mr. Hazy. You're on the right bill now.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'll be very brief. One of my roles at the Council is to coordinate and conduct what we call criminal record seminars, educational seminars for people who have a criminal record, helping them to learn where to get an accurate record, what to do with that record, how to approach employers with it, if they may qualify for an expungement or some other remedy, basically how to move on with their lives in a positive way. And you know, on a regular basis, we have people coming to those seminars who started some kind of post-secondary education program, and then to find out not until later that they're not going to be able to get a job in the particular field where they studied. And you should have before you an excerpt from the legislature's 2007 Collateral Sanctions Committee report on criminal records. They found the same thing as they investigated this. They did contact some post-secondary educational institutions, found that some did some of this, you know, a little bit of notification or tried to help with it. I think it might depend on the course and the institution, but it's definitely not happening across the board. You know, I'd like to add that this is not, there's really a, you know, an underlying problem on this issue, which is that some of the barriers or disqualifications that exist are and sometimes irrational, I would even say unreasonable. You know, somebody who, when they're young, is charged or convicted of terroristic threats, for example, which you may not know is really a form of verbal assault. You know, not a good thing, but the DHS disqualification for that offense is 15 years.
So, or what kind of license?
For, I don't know the specific licenses, but generally nursing, direct care type of licenses, nurses' assistants, personal care assistants, those types of things. Now, on the 15-year disqualifications, there is a set-aside process, but that can be very difficult, too. You know, and the list goes on for, you know, we had somebody come to a seminar who was a horse groomer and changed jobs and could no longer be a horse groomer because of some of the restrictions around horse racing for people in those occupations. This bill doesn't address that issue, but you know, we think this bill is a way to give people fair notice of what their options are. I hope it wouldn't discourage people, but I'd rather have a little discouragement at the front end so they can do the right thing. I also hope that it will raise public awareness.
Somebody needs to move their cell phone away from the mic.
I hope it will also increase public awareness of some of these laws that could use some adjustments. You know, counselors will have to become aware, parents, prospective students. And then another piece that is often asked on this, I'll just preempt the questions on this, is where does somebody go to get this information? Mm-hmm. There is no central place for somebody to go to get this right now. Mm-hmm. I hope that something can come forward in the future that either the post-secondary educational institutions or an organization like ours could get funding to develop maybe a website where people can go to find out what are the barriers for their particular crime. Currently, you have to do a lot of searching and finding the right people. So that's the big picture, and I think they can be best told by somebody who's been impacted by the issue.
Hey.
Yes.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Shantae Holmes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I, too, am a person that's been impacted by the misinformation or the no information that was available as I first entered into college. So this is really an urgent topic to me, and I'm really dedicated to trying to make sure that as many individuals get the proper notification or direction that they could possibly take so that they can better plan or prepare themselves accordingly to be successful. I have a criminal background, and I took the necessary steps to transitioning my life and moving forward with it by doing everything that I could possibly do, which was to go to treatment, comply with the courts, complete my probation, live in transitional housing. And it was after 2 years of my sobriety that I decided then that I wanted to even further my education and move forward with my life even further. So I decided to enroll at MCTC and thought, well, why not better yet work with maybe individuals like myself who have experienced some triumphs and struggling situations in their life. When I walked into the campus, the environment was warm and friendly and very pleasant and welcoming and stuff. At that particular time, there were no counselors that approached me and said, hey, Shantae, do you know that your criminal background is going to hinder you or limit your capabilities of going into human services? So therefore, I continued to proceed on and feel welcomed and embrace myself within the school. I worked on campus. I studied on campus. I ate on campus. Everything in my life consisted on campus and stuff. So through that, though, I got to take a back step and think for a minute there was one position, which was the FAFSA application form, which is that financial aid government state form. There was a question on there that asked, maybe I'm not wording it correctly, but have you been convicted of a felony? I, at that particular time, was so fearful that there was going to be a shutdown in my opportunities to further my education that I basically denied the question and did not answer correctly to the question. I did that for 2 years just to get my finances paid and to assist me with my education. Now, through my entire years in college, though, I made the dean's list several times. I was welcome to the dean's breakfast and brunches and stuff, and not even in that atmosphere did anyone come up to me and say, you know what, you're getting them A's and B's, Shante, but let me tell you, as soon as you apply, you're gonna be shut down. No one at least told me nothing of the sort. They gave me, congratulations, keep up the good work. You're a great student. We look forward to having you in our program. Look forward to moving on to Metro. Okay, that's good. But still yet, they're left dormant, that criminal background that I had and that I was trying to recover from. It wasn't until my final semester, and everybody who's a college student recognizes that an internship is a very valuable and imperative part of your degree process and stuff. And it was during that final semester in my internship that the instructor requested or specified to us that we would have to do a criminal background check through the Department of Human Services. And that's when my heart dropped. I said, oh boy, I might not be able to continue on with this. And this was at the final semester. What happened, out of a class of about, I say give or take, 25 pupil and stuff, myself being one and another peer, we received this bright pink letter back when the rest of the remaining peers got a yellow letter. And our letter said, remove her immediately from direct services. So that there is still kind of clinching, because it was a real dagger in my heart at that time, and I just really couldn't breathe. But I knew that I was dedicated to getting this degree, because my gosh, I had financially went through the strains. I had taken out loans, and I had committed myself to getting my AS in human services. With that, I went on and started the channels necessary in order to try to overcome that. Some of those barriers that took place was the fact that the instructor told all of my other peers, all you have to do is just go and interview with two companies and then get your internship and get it out the way, 120 hours and 6 months or whatever, and you know, then you're successfully ready to graduate. Well, for me, with this criminal background and this letter that said, remove her immediately from direct services, that was the barrier. And I had to interview with five places, such as Genesis, PPL, Lutheran Social Services, Anoka Mental Health, Medical Services and stuff. These are places that I had researched that had that mission statement that we're here to help thriving individuals and help individuals retransition back into society and all of that good stuff. So actually going to them and being turned down from them put another stigma on me as well, until I actually went to the place called Amicus, which is the Latin word for friendship. As I went to Amicus, Amicus welcomed me into their doors, irregardless to what the Department of Human Services had specified. They welcomed me in. They allowed me to complete my internship, which from the internship hired me on as their Sisters Helping Sisters coordinator, seeing that I fully possessed the capabilities of operating in a room where people were considered as vulnerable adults that I once was myself. In addition to going through the agencies to interview and stuff, I went through the process of speaking with a judge and was told that there was only a 3-minute conversation. I cried on the phone with the judge for about 15 minutes. Please just let me work. I just want to give back to my community and stuff. And that still led me nowhere. So now today, as I mentioned, I completed my internship. Thank God for Amicus. I was able to walk and receive my cap and gown and receive my AS in Human Services, where now I work at Family and Children's Services, and I return back to Shakopee and the workhouse to inform women, and I facilitate groups on Thursdays, which I had to cancel today just to be here to speak because I'm so passionate at wanting to make sure that I can give them at least the right type of information that they need in order to feel hopeful again about their lives and be successful in life again. So I just encourage you to make the best decision, and please consider that there are people out here that really would like an opportunity to be successful and re-enter back into society. That word recidivism, some of us are tired of it, and we really want a chance to better ourselves. And I thank you for your opportunity, Madam Chair and Committee. Thank you very much.
Ms. Holmes, thank you so much for your testimony and congratulations on your success. I was so worried we were going to have a bad ending here that I'm just very happy that it worked out for you.
No.
I did have a question from Ms. Grimes because we were having this discussion yesterday about drug offenses in particular and eligibility for federal aid and for the Pell Grant. Mm-hmm. And yesterday we talked about that you were not ineligible unless the drug offense took place while you were a student. Why would they ask that question about the felony on the, was it on the FAFSA?
Yes, it was on the FAFSA, and it did not say, it said, if I may be quoting it wrong, but it said, in a time span of this, have you been convicted? And you know, and either I could have.
Okay, well, Ms. Grimes, could you clarify that for us?
Madam Chair, Tricia Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. It's my understanding that this is a question on the FAFSA. Up until 3 or 4 years ago, it asked if the student had a drug conviction, and if they had a drug conviction, they were not eligible for federal student aid, the Pell Grant, Stafford loans, things like that. Then they changed it 3 or 4 years ago to say that it had to be, you had to have a drug offense while receiving aid, mm-hmm. while receiving federal aid.
Okay.
So now it applies to a smaller population of students than it did previously.
So Ms. Holmes might have applied under the previous
right.
law.
Right. I was there when it asked the question, would you like some funding for education now because of your conviction?
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Senator Latz or for the witnesses? Senator Sharon.
Given what we were just talking about, is there, if you're going to be notifying, wouldn't it be useful for the students to know about this regulation for Pell Grants as well for drug convictions? Is there a way that that can be communicated as well at this point? Would that be useful?
Could I answer that, Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Hasse.
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator, I think that is a good idea. I just learned about this change in the law myself. And I sent that information out to some people who work in the field, and some of them were surprised that it's changed. So I think there is an education piece where there needs to be, you know, notice that people need to know that if their offense was before they started school, then they would still qualify. You know, it didn't fit in under this category, and we were trying to make the notice part as least onerous as possible for the higher education institutions. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Fuller informs me we need a change. Something's missing in the language, and that is the word arrest on line 112. So if Senator Latz would like to make the motion to, after on line 112, after the, to insert arrest, comma, then also put a comma after charge. Is that right?
So moved.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair?
Senator Latz.
In light of Senator Sharon's comments, I wonder if we can fashion some kind of addition.
Right. Yeah, I was
Senator Sharon.
I was thinking that you could add that you should investigate the impact that the charges or conviction may have on grants you may be receiving or your chances of employment.
Or perhaps on eligibility for financial aid.
Or something along that line. Mr. Fuller's suggestions there, but
well, Mr. Fuller's working on it. Is there anyone from the audience that wants to comment on this bill? Then this, what I'd like to do with this bill, Senator Latz, and we'll get that change in a second, is dual track it, because you need to go to Judiciary Committee, but we also could put it in the omnibus bill. So we could do both.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And then whatever changes the Judiciary Committee makes, then we can make those amendments. Questions, Senator Wieger?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Latz, maybe we could get a mock-up of a sample admission application. I assume this would be on the admission application, either online or the written one. And as to where it might go, I assume that's where it would go on the admission. That's what's required. But if we could just see what it looks like, what you might have in mind, and maybe the higher education could share some thoughts on that.
Okay. Well, there isn't anyone here today who wants to comment, but certainly down the road we can certainly take more input on this.
Yeah. Madam Chair, the bill does not specify where the notice will take place, just that notice shall be given to someone who applies.
Right. And leaves it up to them, but they could tell us where they think they would put it.
I don't know that we need to be quite that proscriptive as long as they're supplying the notice in a way that's meaningful.
Tell me when you're ready. Okay. Mr. Fuller.
I would say recommend after a study on line 13 there, just sort of paralyze the language. And on your chances to obtain federal, comma, state, and other higher education and financial aid.
Say that again. And on your chances to...
And on your chances to obtain...
To obtain.
And
retain.
I said federal. I tried to catch everything. Federal, comma, state, and other higher education financial aid.
I'd offer that as an amendment.
Okay, Senator Sharon moves the amendment. Are there any comments, questions, concerns?
I'm sorry, where exactly does that...
Right at the end of the sentence.
At the end of the sentence. Mm-hmm.
And on your chances to obtain...
And on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And on your chances to obtain federal, state, and other higher education financial aid. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, anything else? All right, then Senator Latz. Do you want to make the motion?
Chair,
you want me to make it?
I move that Senate File 537 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary, and also that it be recommended to pass and laid over for inclusion in the...
I think you can actually just put it in because it doesn't have any monetary impact.
Okay. And that it be included in the Omnibus Higher Education Bill.
Okay. Is that okay with members? All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, thank you very much, Senator Latz.
Thank you.
Then the last bill on the agenda is Senator Wieger.
And Chair, should I go to the desk?
Yeah.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, Senate File 21 establishes a Minnesota P20 partnership. This bill is similar to the one that passed our committee last year as well as the House, and it was included in the omnibus E-12 policy bill, which was vetoed for other reasons last session. So we have had presentations. There's nothing new in this bill, and I believe everyone on the committee, and for those that are new, you heard it in E-12 policy. So in the interest of time and recognizing that the Finance Committee is meeting now. Okay. I would stand for questions.
Okay, this is something that we did here last year, and the legislature did pass. Any questions from anyone? Anyone in the audience? Okay, then Senator Wieger.
Madam Chair, if there could be a dual track
on
this.
That's fine.
And it would be that Senate File 21 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the State and Local Government Oversight Committee.
Okay.
And
included in the omnibus higher ed bill.
Yes.
Okay. So it goes to state and local. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The committee is adjourned.
fast work.
Finance. I might even get to make my own amendment.
That could have been.